You're listening to a Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders 30th Anniversary Podcast. Founded in 1978, GLAAD is New England's leading legal rights organization dedicated to ending discrimination based on sexual orientation, HIV status, and gender identity and expression. For more information and updates on GLAAD's current legal work, visit us at glaad.org.
So tell me, when you were in middle school, how did you feel different?
Well, it's just like, I always, you know, felt like I wanted to do what I was doing, but like I really started transitioning then, so it was kind of hard for me. A lot of people didn't understand like what I was going through, and like they, you know, didn't think it was right.
How did you experience people not understanding what you were going through?
Like just being discriminatory, you know, like saying names or not allowing me to do what I wanted to do with my life.
Tell me about the principal. What sort of barriers did the principal put up?
The principal, he told me I couldn't, like, wear skirts or just, like, regular female clothing that any of the other girls could wear. He made me report into his office every morning before class to make sure what I was wearing was appropriate to him and, like, stuff like that. There was one time when I was in class and I had butterfly barrettes inside of my hair, and he had told me that if I was going to try to wear any type of feminine barrettes, I had to go home and I wouldn't be able to come to school. And, you know, I told him I was just there for my education, and what I want to wear or what I do shouldn't really matter.
Katrina Harrington, Trina for short, was in seventh grade when she started having trouble at school. Like most girls her age, she wore skirts and hair accessories and started wearing makeup. But unlike other students, Trina was disciplined for how she dressed. Butterfly barrettes got her sent home for the day. Eventually, the school's administration set up so many barriers to Trina attending school, she stopped going altogether. GLAAD intervened and filed suit on Trina's behalf. Doe v. Units in 2000, Doe because in court documents Trina was known only as Pat Doe, was the first reported decision in a case brought by a transgender student. In the decision, the Massachusetts Superior Court ruled that a middle school may not prohibit a transgender student from expressing her female gender identity. Trina began dressing in a more feminine style when she entered South Junior High School in Brockton, Massachusetts, a small city about 25 miles south of Boston. School administrators took notice. At first, they warned her that her clothing wasn't appropriate. Then they started doling out detentions and suspensions. By eighth grade, Trina had to have the principal, Kenneth Cardoni, approve her clothing every morning before classes began. If he didn't approve, he sent her home. Trina missed more and more school and fell further and further behind in her education, eventually repeating eighth grade. When the principal told Trina's grandmother, her primary caretaker, that he wouldn't enroll Trina for the 2000-2001 school year if she wore any female clothing or accessories, Trina's grandmother called GLAAD. GLAAD's Transgender Rights Project Director, Jennifer Levi, remembers getting the call.
This is a case that came in through our info line. We heard from a young student who said, I'm going to school and I'm being sent home on a daily basis because of the fact that the principal is unhappy with the way I look. This is a biologically male student who identified as female and appropriately was wearing female clothing to school. And by her reports at that time, the principal set up some very specific guidelines about what she could and couldn't wear. And her educational experience was being interfered with because of the principal's misunderstanding about trans identities.
Taking Trina's case, Levi says, just made sense.
This was a young person whose family did a lot of work to understand what she was going through. It wasn't as if they started out saying, oh, great, you know, we have a transgender 11-year-old. Let's let this person who we've always known as a boy go to school dressed as a girl. Far from it. They went to mental health counselors and they said, you know, what's going on? We don't really understand this experience at all. And they came to learn what it was that she needed. And they were tremendously supportive of her and were exceedingly frustrated when the opposition came from the school's administrators, both because it was a young person whose educational experience was being interfered with and because it was a young transgender person who was just beginning to develop a healthy identity generally, you know, as an adolescent. as a young girl, as a transgender person, it seemed exceedingly important for us to get involved so that she could stay in school. And when I met her, you know, her energy was just so positive, and it was so clear that something needed to be done to help her that we pretty quickly identified it as an important GLAAD case.
Levi says that at the core of the case was the principal's misunderstanding of transgender identities. Specifically, Cardone conflated gay experiences and transgender experiences in a way that showed he didn't understand critical differences.
For example, the principal really talked about the fact that if Trina was gay rather than trans, then he would have had sort of a more permissible range of expression, and that she never talked about being gay. And so there was no triggering point for this, you know, kind of broader understanding of what her experience was. Well, she's not gay. And so it wouldn't have made any sense for her to talk about that identity. And so, you know, when she talked about, as you know, as much as she could for someone who was pre-adolescent at the time, her gender identity, it wasn't in ways that meant anything to the principal, to the other administrators, even to some of the teachers there. I guess what distressed me the most is he didn't seem to be willing to learn what was going on. You know, his focus really was based on outdated stereotypes, and he just was not receptive to recognizing the significance of this experience for her. And, you know, we tried. We certainly, you know, it wasn't the first thing we thought of to file a case. We tried to negotiate. We tried to come up with some alternatives. We tried to have him meet with, you know, mental health providers in the community who could explain this experience. And it really was just such an old world, old school experience to have him respond and say, absolutely not in my school.
For Trina, then in her early teens and struggling to be understood and accepted, Cardone's attitude was especially difficult.
He just told me, well, it's what I have to do, what he says, he's in charge, and like I don't have a choice in the matter, and you know, it was difficult. We got into a very big altercation, and you know, I got suspended a couple times by him for not following his rules and everything. It was so stressful for me just to have to, like, go through that. I was just trying to be understood and trying to do what I had to do. And for him to try to, like, put a barrier up against, like, me trying to better my life was, you know, it was really hard for me.
One of Cardone's core arguments was that Trina's clothes violated the school's dress code, prohibiting, quote, clothing which could be disruptive or distractive to the educational process or which could affect the safety of students. But Levi remembers Trina's classmates being supportive. It was the administration, she says, that was the problem.
One of the things that Trina reported to us was that the problems that she was having were all with the administration. She wasn't facing harassment in classes. Her friends were fine. In fact, her friends were supportive and really, you know, said to her, yeah, what's going on? Why is the principal doing this? It doesn't make any sense. There was one day that I was picking her up after school because we had just had a hearing and we had to go to some other meeting that she had to be at. And I was parked outside of the school that she attended, and a group of her friends came up to my car and they said, Trina's coming around the back. And I said, oh, okay. And they said, there was a reporter that showed up that wanted to film her for TV, and she didn't want to be on TV. And so she said, you go out and pretend you're me, and I'll run around the back. And these, you know, this group of friends picked one of the kids and said, you go out and you pretend you're Trina. And so she proudly walked out of the building, and the reporter filmed her for, you know, the evening news, and Trina ran out the back, and then I picked her up and we went off to her meeting. But I thought, what a fabulous group of friends. They totally get it. They're completely supportive. And that's the kind of energy that Trina brought to her daily life. And I think that it was, completely matched by her friends.
GLAAD filed a complaint in Massachusetts Superior Court in Plymouth, claiming that the school had violated Trina's right to freedom of expression, personal dress and appearance, and her right to attend school free from sex and disability discrimination. Jennifer Levi.
The argument was fairly straightforward, and it was that she was being excluded from school on the basis of her sex, because if she had been biologically female, known to all of the administrators as female, there was no question but that she could wear the clothing that she was wearing at the time.
The court agreed. On October 11, 2000, GLAAD won a preliminary injunction from the Superior Court requiring the school to let Trina attend class wearing clothing that male or female students could wear without being disciplined. Public opinion about the case was divided. Brockton Mayor John G. Unitz, named in the case in his capacity as the school committee chair, told the Brockton Enterprise newspaper that Trina should consider the effect of her clothing choices on other students. The Patriot Ledger, a regional newspaper for Boston's South Shore, also voiced its, quote, concern for the majority in an October 14th editorial. The judge's decision in favor of Pat Doe is a clear example of dictating social doctrine from the bench, wrote Ledger editor Joanne Fitzpatrick. We hope the next judge will have more understanding of the rights of the majority of school children who go to class to learn school subjects, not to participate in psychological experiments. But again, the court disagreed, and in November 2000, upheld the October injunction. Transgender students, the court said, need the same support and protection for their safety that other students need. It also recognized that, quote, exposing children to diversity at an early age serves the important social goals of increasing their ability to tolerate differences and teaches respect for everyone's unique personal experience. Later, in February 2001, a trial court denied the school's motion to dismiss Trina's disability and due process claims. In a first-of-its-kind ruling, the court held that Massachusetts disability law, unlike federal law, does not exclude transgender people from its protections. Trina was free to go back to school, but instead of returning to South Junior High, she transferred to a local vocational school where she took classes in math, English, and drama. She also took medical assisting classes at a nearby community college. Although she decided not to return to her old school, it was important to Trina that she had the choice.
It was like a weight was lifted off of my shoulders. It changed my life, really, though, because I thought I was never going to make it through school. I was going to have to drop out or, like, go to a private school. And, like, I found out that I didn't. You know, I could just get my education like everybody else and just live my life like a regular person.
Trina also found a role model in Levi.
I learned a lot from her. Like, I learned that, you know, like, you shouldn't have to be ashamed of what you want to do or who you are. Like, you can still be successful and you can still do what you need to do in life. She was a big inspiration, like, in so many ways. Like, just, like, seeing how successful she was and what she was doing, like, it made me, like, believe that I could do it and that I could get through school and get a job and not have to always worry about being discriminated against.
Levi says the Doe case shows the difficulty of confronting people's ideas about gender roles and gender expression, however unconscious those ideas might be. By providing a starting point for education, the law can help not only challenge those entrenched ideas, it can help change them.
Well, I think that one of the things the law does is try to identify relevant and irrelevant characteristics based on the relevant locus of attention. So, for example, in the workplace, you know, it's taken a history of education for people to acknowledge that race is an irrelevant characteristic for determining who can do the work. So, too, will it take a history of education to identify for people that gender identity is irrelevant to one's ability to do the work? And, you know, the education continues to go on in around characteristics that we've been talking about for a much longer time than we've been talking about sexual orientation and gender identity.
Levi says that this understanding is also generational. Younger people haven't developed entrenched ideas about gender and sexuality and tend to be more accepting.
We do hear from parents of very young children with issues around gender identity, and the problems are not the other kids. They just get it. You know, I had a mother call and tell me that, you know, her child had transitioned and was presenting as a gender which was different than the kids from the previous year had known her as. And they talked to that group of kids and they said, you know, this person who you knew to be a girl is a boy. And they said, oh, okay. It didn't even give them pause. And so that's what I think is hopeful, because those young people will be the teachers and the administrators and the lawyers and the judges and everything else. And that's how I think change happens.
Now in her early 20s, Trina is excited to plan for her future. She's in college, taking medical assistant courses at a school in the Boston neighborhood of Brighton. A city girl at heart, she's excited to move out of Brockton and closer to school. Looking back on the case, Trina is proud. proud of her family and friends for supporting her, proud of standing up for herself. She's also proud to be a role model and hopes she has paved the way for younger students.
My advice would be just go and get your education. Don't worry about what anyone else has to tell you or, you know, if they don't agree with what you're doing, it's all right. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, you're just regular like everyone else. Considering I was so young when I went through it, like I was still like a very early teenager. Like I didn't really like know too much about life, you know, and like going through that, like it was a big like reality check to me. Like, oh, you know, like everything's not always going to be perfect, but you can push through it if it's not. You know what I mean?
Thank you for listening to this GLAAD 30th Anniversary Podcast. Visit GLAAD.org to learn more about this story and to download a new podcast on the 15th of every month.
Special thanks to Seth Bernstein of Eidetic Production.